with trees planted in their name in the Fraser Community Urban Garden. The demand for the $50 trees got so high, the group increased the number of trees from 12 to 20. Local Quaker group called the Memphis Friends Meeting will help plant native fruit trees in the heart of Fraser. Those who donated will get a certificate and a photo of the tree. In addition to engaging the community, the effort will introduce new food sources to the area, allowing locals to pick from the orchard. For Julia Baker, I'm Natalie Van Gundy. More on this story and others are available at dailymemphian.com.
Hey, this is Jim Spake, and I'm host of Cabbages and Kings on Thursday afternoons here on WYXR Memphis 91.7 FM.
Hey, this is Steve Selvage, and you are listening to WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis.
Hello, Memphis. This is Reverend Charles Hodges with High Rhythm Section. You are listening to WYXR 91.7 FM, the station with the city's soul. Continue to listen.
Well, good morning, everybody. On the Friday after Christmas, it's WYXR Memphis 91.7 FM. My name is Ron. I have the pleasure and the privilege of being here with you every Friday from noon until 1. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you're having a great holiday weekend. Family and friends surrounding you and having a good time. And we have a very special program today on Riverside. We're going to do a remembrance and appreciation of Memphis author Stanley Booth. And I have special guests in the studio, including David Less and Stanley's daughter, Ruby. How you doing, guys?
Great. How about you?
I'm doing fine, David. Thank you so much for initiating this effort to appreciate Memphis author Stanley Booth. And I'm going to hand it off to you because you took the initiative on this. You wanted to remember him. And I'm happy to provide some airtime for you to do that. Welcome, David Less, who's a local Memphis author and Memphis music producer and record label owner, and you fill in the rest on the gaps of what I haven't told of your history, Dave, but thanks so much for being here and taking the initiative to help us remember Memphis author Stanley Booth.
Well, I appreciate you giving us the opportunity. He was a really important guy. Let's start out, if you don't mind, by playing a track. This is Washington Phillips' Denomination Blues, and then we'll come back and talk about Stanley for a minute.
Yes, here we are, Riverside, WYXR Memphis, with David Less and Ruby Booth. Stay tuned, talking about Stanley Booth this morning on WYXR Memphis. Here's Washington Phillips.
Good man.
Let's start him over. Live radio, y'all. Here we go. Washington Phillips.
I want to tell you the natural fact. Every man don't understand the Bible like, but that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Well, denominations has no right to fight. They ought to just treat each other right. And that's all. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. The primitive Baptists, they believe you can't get to heaven unless you wash your feet. But that's all now. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. The only primitive that has any part is the one that's after washing with a pure heart. And that's all. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Now the missionary Baptists, they believe go under the water and not to wash his feet. And that's all. I tell you that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you that's all. Now Jimmy Methodist, they believe. Sprinkle the head and not to wash the feet, and that's all. I tell you, that's all. But you better have Jesus. I tell you, that's all. Now the ME Methodists, they believe. Sprinkle the head and not to wash the feet, and that's all. I tell you, that's all. But you better have Jesus now. I tell you, that's all. Now the African Methodists, they believe the same, cause a new denomination ain't a thing but a name, and that's all. Now, I tell you, that's all. But you better have Jesus now. I tell you, that's all. Now the holiness people, when they came in, they said, boys, we can make it by living above sin, but that's all. I tell you, that's all. But you better have Jesus now. I tell you, that's all. Now the church of God has it in the mind that they can get to heaven without the sacrament wine, but that's all now. I tell you, that's all. But you better have Jesus now. I tell you, that's all.
There goes Washington Phillips, Denomination Blues, Part 1.
There's a line that in the Washington Phillips. The legend was Washington Phillips wandered into a studio, recorded a whole laundry list of those spiritual songs, wandered out, and no one ever saw him again.
Wow.
But there was a version that Ry Cooder and Jim Dickinson did of that song that was on the album Into the Purple Valley. And the reason I like that particular song is there's a line, you can go to your college, you can go to your school, if you ain't got Jesus, you's an educated fool. And people are contacting me, God knows why they continue to contact me about Stanley, but I'm happy that they do, because it means that they associate me with Stanley, and it's a great association to be, because he was a great man. About his funeral, which is a Catholic mass. And people don't realize that 30 years ago, Stanley converted and became Catholic, which is an unusual thing, I think. Ruby?
Yes. Yeah.
You're nodding your head.
Yes, certainly. It was the consternation of many of his heretic friends and the consternation of his very devoutly Methodist parents. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But people think that was his direction. Those were his wishes. So any of his heretic friends, myself included, yep, would have thought, "Wait a minute, what are you doing to him?" But it was actually his at his direction.
Yeah. No, he said many years ago to friends, and we had notes that he wanted a full Catholic mass, invitation only. So the only divergence that we've done is that we have opened it up to the broader community. If you love Stanley, if you knew him and wanted to honor him, you are welcome to come to the Mass.
Yeah.
Why don't we give them do we have the time and date? It's tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it's tomorrow at 11 at Immaculate Conception Cathedral, and y'all are more than welcome.
There you are. We're here with David Less and Ruby Booth at Remembrance and Appreciation of Stanley Booth this morning here on Riverside. Thanks for listening. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is, Stanley was an SOB. I mean, he drove away many people.
Yeah.
When I first talked to Ruby, I told her that I was a friend of Stanley's, and she said, "Well, now Stanley, I know Stanley didn't have any friends, and that he drove most of the people that really loved him away." And I said, no, you don't understand. Other than the first time I met Stanley, when we almost got into a fight, which we did, we almost got into a fist fight the first time I met Stanley, we never had a cross word. And she was aghast. She couldn't believe
it. I was stunned because I one of the things about my father, when he turned his loving attention upon you, it was one of the most remarkable experiences you could have. But most people got the scorpion tail along with that sugar. And so to meet somebody who had only had kind words from him was a surprise.
Well, I will tell you this. At the end of his life, he got more than he deserved, because you have to say he was surrounded by angels. There were people who did not know that he was Stanley Booth, the writer. He was Stanley Booth, the man who traveled with the Rolling Stones, who had done all that. And I have to tell you, Linda Hibbert, Nanette Ballinger, Mike Sewell, these were people who took care of him when he needed it, who had no reason to. And when he was on his deathbed, held his hand and did extraordinary kindnesses for Stanley that were above and beyond, and truthfully did amazing things for him that no one else would have done. I think we've talked a little bit. Let's listen to something else. Here's a story that Stanley told me, because to really put him into context as to who he was and what he did, if you went into Stanley Booth's house, it was a path. You had to go through, weave through incredible things. And you might trip over something that, you would talk to Stanley and he'd say, well, you know, I was at Keith's house. And Mick, you know, and you go, wait a minute, Keith. Oh, I was at Keith Richards' house. And Mick, oh, Mick Jagger.
Right.
And Graham, oh, Graham Parsons.
Right.
And
right.
Marion Faithfull. Yep. And as casually as he could possibly say these things. And, of course, you know, they were absolutely, absolutely real.
Right.
So one day he called me and he said, oh, David, I found this tape, these little small reel-to-reel tapes of an interview that I did. That I had lost. This was just last year. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I'd forgotten I did it. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, I was in the studio with Otis Redding.
Right.
The day he was recording Dock of the Bay.
Wow.
And he said, it was a Friday, and he said, I've got to go do a gig. I'll be back Monday. So we recorded our conversation. It was kind of an interview, but it was really more of a conversation. And he got on the airplane, and he flew to Cleveland, and he did his gig, and then he died.
Yep.
He said, and I thought I'd lost it. I found it. I found the tapes.
Wow.
And I digitized them, and no one's ever heard them.
Wow.
And he said, what do you think I should do with them? And I said, well, up.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, so they are there in his house. We need to clean out his house.
Yes.
We need to find that. Yep. Because they are digitized and saved, but
absolutely.
No one's heard them.
He actually had a reputation around that time because of Otis Dion and some other people that he interviewed as being the angel of death, because he would find these folks that he had revered and loved and go interview them. And the word got around, don't let Stanley Booth interview you or you'll die.
Yeah.
So that
was
a real phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, Brian Jones.
Yeah.
he said he killed Brian Jones.
Well, you know.
That was one of his things.
Yeah. Right.
He was friends with Brian, and then Brian drowned.
Yeah, no, so, absolutely.
Yeah, he had that. But let's listen to Dock of the Bay.
Okay.
While we talk about that.
Sure.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting. Watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again. Yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll in. Just sitting on the dock of the bay.
goes the great Otis Redding. The show is Riverside, WYXR Memphis, 91.7 FM. We have special guests this morning, David Less and Ruby Booth. We're doing a remembrance and appreciation of Memphis author, writer Stanley Booth. Thanks for coming in, David. Thanks for organizing this appreciation of Stanley.
Organized is not a word that we use much, particularly when we talk about Stanley Booth or me. Right. But I appreciate you allowing.
You're being humble. You put this together. Thank you, and all credit is due to you for that.
I wouldn't say together, and again, organized. Those don't really fit here.
Right. Well, you're showing appreciation for a Memphis legend, a writer who spent time with the Rolling Stones. Well, according to some people, the definitive, story of the early Rolling Stones, and we're here with Stanley's daughter and David Less.
Yeah, well, Stanley did, so much for Memphis. If you think about, and for a lot of people, Stanley in 1965 wrote a Playboy article about Furry Lewis that really brought Furry out of obscurity. Furry was sweeping the streets of Memphis, literally, after having had a career, and that brought him out of obscurity, and I'm younger than Stanley by about 10 years, and younger than Dickinson, and younger than Sid, and was really fortunate to get to know those people, Bob Palmer and those people. They somehow let me into that group as a...
Robert Palmer, the author, not the musician.
Robert Palmer, the author, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wrote Deep Blues.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So somehow they allowed me to hang out with them. But the first time I met Stanley, and again, this is not a me story, but we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Because it was the whole story about why I met Stanley.
Yeah, no. What year was this?
This would have been 1979, probably, maybe 1980.
Yeah.
I was producing the Beale Street Music Festival, the early festival, with a group of people, David Evans and Emerson Abel, Harry Winfield. We each had different stages. Harry did the gospel, Emerson did the jazz, David did a blues stage, and I did the main stage, where we put everybody, everybody came in the main
stage. This is the old days of the Beale Street Music Festival. I'm just going to throw in, because I was there, and this is when it was in the muddy fields behind Beale Street, not on Riverside Drive.
This was, yes, that muddy field is called Church Park.
Right.
But it was a muddy field, and nobody knew that it was Church Park.
Yep.
And so we had the main stage, and Jim was on stage. And nobody got on my stage except the artist. It was the thing. Nobody gets on my stage. Mm-hmm. So Jim was playing, and Stanley decided he's going to go up on stage and take a picture. Well, I didn't know Stanley, but I said, nope, you're not coming up here. So right. Stanley, black belt karate Stanley, decides he's going to go up and take a picture.
Anyway.
Well, he didn't know that there was a nobody goes on stage rule, but right. I said nobody goes on stage.
Right.
And, of course, I had hair to my waist and, pansy looking. And I said, no, you're not getting on stage. And so we were ready to duke it out. And Jim looked over and saw what was going on and said, let him on. And I said, okay, go take your picture. Mm-hmm. So he took his picture, and then he went backstage. And, of course, I had the advantage of having five stage hands behind me.
Right.
But, so he took his picture, and he left, and everything was fine. And then I'm still up on stage working, between set changes. And Stanley goes backstage and says, who is that guy who decided I'm not going to get up on stage? I'm Stanley Booth. And my stagehands did not take kindly to that. And a fight ensued. Mm. And so they beat Stanley up.
Right.
Threw him in jail.
Yeah.
Spent the night in jail.
Yep.
Perfect Stanley Booth story.
Mm. Yeah.
A year later, I'm living in Austin, Texas. Phone rings. Hi, this is Stanley Booth. I think we should be friends. Said, yes, I think we should. And from that moment on, we were. We never had a cross word.
Wow.
There was actually a twist to that story.
Wow.
So he got thrown in jail, And for some reason or other,
this Keith is Ruby's Booth, Ruby Booth, Stanley's daughter, speaking here, y'all, for the benefit of our listeners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he got thrown in jail, and for some reason, Keith was looking for him. Mm-hmm. So Keith calls up to the house. Keith Richards.
Not the Rolling Stones.
My mom answers the phone, and he says, "Where's Stanley?" And she says, "Well, he's in jail." And Keith says, "Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it." And so the upshot of that was Keith bailed him back out of jail, and they went and did whatever they were going to do. But wow. So that was so my experience of that story is my mom having told it, not realizing that you were on the other side of it, and being like, "Yeah, Keith sprung him." So that's how he got back out again.
Who gets bailed out of jail by?
Well, now the story continues because I'm in touch with Keith now.
Yeah.
To try to get him to anyway.
Yeah.
But.
So there you go.
The circle is complete.
The circle is complete. Yeah.
Yeah. So at any rate, that whole crazy group with Dickinson, we were friends, and then Stanley and I became friends. When the Stones were coming down, when Keith was when Stanley was touring with the Stones, yeah. And they were going to Muscle Shoals to record. They hadn't intended to record. They were on tour. They wanted to cut, and they went to Muscle Shoals. They said, "Where can we record?" Mm-hmm. We wanted to come to Memphis. Stanley said, "You can't go to Memphis to record. There's no security.
Right.
It's just not possible for you to sneak into Memphis. It can't happen. So, but you can go to Muscle Shoals because nobody will know who you are."
Yep, right. Absolutely.
You know, they don't know. You know, they're a bunch of rednecks. I don't know who.
So everybody in Memphis would recognize you.
Everybody in Memphis would recognize you.
Right.
But you can go to Muscle Shoals. So they had a night off or two nights off, a couple of nights off on the tour. So they went to Muscle Shoals to record. And they were checked into Holiday Inn or something in Muscle Shoals. And they were recording in Muscle Shoals. And so Stanley called Dickinson and said, "Come to Muscle Shoals. The Stones are recording." So Dickinson went to Muscle Shoals, and they were recording, and they did Brown Sugar and Wild Horses. People have probably heard the story from Dickinson. If so, I apologize. They were recording Wild Horses, and they started Wild Horses, and their keyboard player got up from the piano and walked off. And Mick Jagger said, "I guess we need another keyboard player." So Dickinson played piano in Wild Horses, and he asked the keyboardist why he didn't play. He said, "I don't play minor keys." So Dickinson, which was a career-changing moment,
yeah.
Stanley helped him get that because he got him there, and Dickinson played on Wild Horses, which is like a signature moment for him.
Right.
Sure.
And it's because of Stanley. And because the keyboard player wouldn't play minor keys. You want to play Wild Horses?
Let's hear it.
Wild horses you decided to show me the same. No sweeping exits, oh, off stage lines could make me feel bitter.
This is Spooner Oldham. You're listening to WIXR 91.7 FM in Memphis. Thanks for listening and have a good day.
We're here in the studio with David Less and Ruby Booth in a remembrance and appreciation of Memphis author, writer Stanley Booth. How you doing, David? How you doing, Ruby?
Doing okay.
Y'all doing okay this
great
morning?
Yeah,
absolutely. So, you know, there were people that, and Ruby, you jump in and tell me if I'm wrong or if there's people I'm missing, but there were people in Stanley's life that were really benchmark important people.
Sure.
Obviously, the Stones and Keith Richards was critical. But there were a couple of others that I think pivoted around. Jim Dickinson, Finus Newborn, and of course, Jerry Wexler. Who am I missing?
Well, when I was growing up, there was Wexler, there was Guralnick, there were, you know, one of the things is that I think we think a lot about all the musicians that he knew, but he was obviously a writer, and a lot of his influences were writers, and so being a part of that Memphis writing scene was incredibly important to him. So he had all these wonderful connections to the music business, but then also you know, many great writers who he knew and was close to. I mean, he had, you know, peripheral relationships with people like Hunter Thompson and things of that sort, in addition to the music.
Famous Rolling Stone writer.
Yeah.
Writer for Rolling Stone, yeah. Author, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I know that, for example, Finest was a big influence.
And, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Junior.
He wrote the Village Voice piece on Finest, and he used to do a great Finest imitation. But he championed Finest a lot. When it was funny because you know, Stanley was, there was a dichotomy to Stanley, because he was always like this uber Superman who was very needy. You know, he needed help, but he always felt like he didn't wanted to help people. And Finest was someone who really needed help, but was a genius, you know. Yeah. And you can't say genius about very many people. I've only met a few.
Not truly, no.
I don't know if Stanley was a genius. I know Finest was a genius.
Right.
Somehow, I don't know if Sam Phillips was a genius.
Right.
You know, of course, Sam was another person that in that sphere of, oh my God, here's Sam Phillips. Mm-hmm. But he helped Finest in so many ways. When Finest had his hands broken, you know, everybody rallied around Finest, but he got Finest a deal with Atlantic Records, which was significant, and he worked on the solo piano record that was a big deal for Finest, a big comeback for Finest. Finest had mental issues and problems throughout his whole life, and the Atlantic solo piano record that Fred Ford produced, Stanley was heavily involved in, was in the studio, and it was a pivotal moment in Finest's career.
Yeah.
So let's listen to, it took an enormous amount of courage for any pianist to play Willow Wheat for Me. That was Art Tatum's song.
Wow. Right. Yes.
You know, he owned it. If anybody wanted to play Willow Wheat for Me, you better step up and do it.
Art Tatum, a jazz piano legend. Hardly anybody better that I can think of in the jazz world than Art Tatum.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he that was his signature song.
Right.
There was a record, they used to say, God is in the house. Art Tatum walked in, mm-hmm. God is in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the Willow Wheat for Me was the was his signature song. So for Finest to do that took a great deal of nerve, but I think he pulled it off. So why don't we listen to that? This was the record Stanley really made happen for Finest, and he won a Grammy for it, I think.
This is Lorraine's Walk / Willow Wheat for Me from the album Solo Piano by Finest Newbern, WYXR. Memphis. Thank you.
you lose a channel?
Here we are in the studios with David Less and Ruby Booth in appreciation and remembrance of Memphis author Stanley Booth, and that was Finest Newbern and Willow Weep for Me from the solo piano album.
You know, I think rooms like that were probably where he was most comfortable. One of the things that is interesting to me about folks speaking to me about my father and reporting back on their experiences is that so many people associate with him with the Rolling Stones because, of course, he did the Stones book and later the Keith biography. But in a lot of ways, he was old for his age in terms of music, and he really did feel most comfortable in rooms with these old blues and jazz men because he had this encyclopedic knowledge of that music and of the early influences. That's one of the reasons he got along with the Stones so well, was because they shared his passion for that early music. And so it's always fascinating to me to hear something like that, because that's what he played at home. That's what I always felt him to be most comfortable with, just chatting about music of that period. Mm-hmm. And talking about the complexities and the dramas. And, you know, I mean, we tend to think about the 60s and 70s, the Rolling Stones era, you know, rock and roll era, as being very dramatic. But, I mean, they had nothing on those blues men for drama.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. Well, you can't underplay the influence of Fred Ford on both Stanley and me, but it was Wexler. Jerry Wexler that was so influential. Jerry was older than both of than all of us, and a funny story about Wexler. He said one time Wexler asked him, I think Dickinson related story. Wexler said, "Baby, you know, because to do a Wexler imitation, you have to do Elmer Fudd."
Yep. You know? And Stanley had a great Wexler. He did.
Oh yeah.
He did.
For the listeners, Jerry Wexler was a producer for Atlantic Records?
Yeah, Jerry Wexler was a partner and a producer. He produced everybody, A&R. I mean, he was a partner in the label and signed and produced. He was an absolute legend and a great guy. I'll divert for just a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I met Jerry Wexler through Stanley and through Jim Dickinson. I'd written a two-part interview with Jim Dickinson for a local thing called the Dixie Flyer. That this is way back in the mid-70s.
Alternative newspaper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the story is Bob Dylan picked up a copy of it, liked it, gave it to Jerry Wexler. It's actually where Bob Dylan first heard of Jim Dickinson.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But he gave it to Wexler, and Wexler liked it and called Dickinson and said, "Oh, this is great, and who's this guy?" And so Dickinson told me I should call Jerry Wexler.
Wow.
So I called Wexler, and that's how I got to know Wexler. And I arranged an interview in Muscle Shoals with Wexler. And so Stanley and Dickinson both said, "Okay, here's the deal. You're going to know you're in." I guess I can say this on the radio. Mm-hmm. You'll bleep it if not.
Okay.
"Here's how you know you're in: if he shows you his balls." I said, "Look, guys, I can only tell this story because everybody else is dead now." I said, "Guys, we're going to be in Muscle Shoals studio. There is not going to be an opportunity for Jerry Wexler to show me his balls. I don't care how much he likes me. There's not going to be an opportunity for Jerry Wexler to show me."
More fool you.
So they said, they both grinned and said, "Listen, that's how you know you're in. He shows you his balls, you're in." I said, "Okay." So I go and I do the interview with Wexler. And, of course, I'm a jazz guy.
Yep.
That's my background. We talked about jazz, and we talked about old music, and we talked about all of the stuff that Stanley and I talked about. We knew all that stuff. And so that's where Wexler connected with Stanley. That's where they connect. And that's where I connect. That's where I connect with Stanley. That's where I connect with Wexler. So we're talking about all this stuff, and he says, listen, baby, we're not finished. I got to go back in. I'm cutting. Stay overnight. Come in the morning, and we'll finish. I'm staying at Barry Beckett's house. You come in the morning, we'll finish. I said, okay. I didn't have any money, but I got a hotel room. So I stayed overnight at the Holiday Inn, probably the same one the Stones stayed at.
Right.
And in the morning, I go to Barry Beckett's house. His wife says, he's out at the swimming pool. Okay. I go out, Wex is swimming, you know, doing laps. He gets out of the pool, drops his pants, squeezes out his thing. He showed me his balls, and we finished the interview. And from that moment on, I knew I was in. And then from that moment on, Wex and I were great friends.
Wow.
We connected. But at any rate,
how funny.
I divert. At any rate,
it's a good diversion, thanks.
Stanley and Wexler were as tight as they could be.
Oh, yeah.
And Wexler's question was, Stanley, how do you know everything? You're as smart as I am. How do you know everything? And it's because, and Stanley said, because I never worked. All I ever did was read books and listen to music.
Yep.
And, of course, that's all Wexler ever did. He didn't get a job until he was 39 years old.
Yep.
That's when he went to work.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes. You have to, you know, when I closed my business, I had a television production thing. I closed my business. I was so depressed that I didn't work for a year. And when I got a job, Stanley said, I'm very disappointed in you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was very disappointed that I went to work.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. 100%. Your role, I mean, being his daughter, you know, like, he would come in with a stack of books, and that was, you know, you would read them, and then you would talk about them. And that was, I mean, we would listen to music, we would talk about books. He sincerely believed, I mean, obviously, he went to University of Memphis, he had a degree, but mainly, he just believed in diving really, really deeply into the texts. He was an obsessive writer. There's a wonderful story of him trying to write a piece, and he's really disappointed with it. He was really frustrated with it because he used the same word within three pages of each other.
Ooh, no.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Well, he...
Just real quick, I'm here with David Less and Ruby Booth, and a remembrance and appreciation of Memphis author Stanley Booth here on Riverside WYXR Memphis. Thanks for listening, y'all. And we've got about another 10 minutes or so before Devin is here with Audio Log. And thanks so much for listening, and hope you're having a great holiday weekend with your family and friends. Stay tuned here at WYXR. Continue, David. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was in the nursing home.
Yeah.
And he said, he grabbed my arm and he said, David, the guy is bothering me. It's killing me. The white guitar player that everybody wanted to play with in the 40s. I can't think his name. What is his name? I said, Stanley, I'm not sure who you're talking about. He said, you know. Come on.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not sure who you're talking about. I go home. I get a call, you know, like the next day. Eddie Condon. I said, of course. I don't know. Of course. Uh-huh. Eddie Condon. I got it. Uh-huh. Okay. But anyway, no, jazz, you know, we talked old jazz. We talked about Art Pepper, and we talked about all the old jazz, and he was encyclopedic. He knew everything. Should we play another song?
Sure.
Jim Dickinson. This is off Dickinson's first record on Atlantic. Tom Dowd produced, and it kind of gives the carnival sense of what, it's not one that people listen to much, but it's of that time, I think. The crazy time that we did. It's called Oh How She Dances.
And we're going to play that in just one second, but I wanted to throw in here for the listeners. We've been talking around the books that Stanley Booth wrote, and I wanted to mention the names of them. Dance with the Devil, The Rolling Stones and Their Times, 1984. Rhythm Oil, A Journey Through the Music of the American South, 1991. His biography of Keith Standing in the Shadows, 1996. And The True Adventures of the Rolling Stones, dated 2000, revised iteration of Dance with the Devil. So that's his sort of his.
No, the other one.
Red Hot and Blue.
Red Hot and Blue.
Red Hot and Blues.
Yeah.
The last one just came out.
Yeah. I'm blanking on it too.
Was it Red Hot and Blue? Was that? No.
After that.
Okay.
He just re-released the
We re-released that one, but there's the anthology.
I don't know.
We'll look it up.
We'll look it up. Yeah. Meantime, you want to hear the Jim Dickinson?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, you want to do the just reintroduce the song?
Yeah, it's just off of Dixie Fry, Jim Dickinson's first record on Atlantic, called Oh How She Dances.
Here we go. WYXR Memphis, thanks for listening. Again, we're here with David Less and Ruby Booth. Here comes Jim Dickinson.
This way, ladies and gentlemen, right this way to see the greatest conglomeration of curiosities ever gathered together under one canvas tent. See the Indian rubber boy and two-ton tiny, the fat lady. See Prince Juju Bobo, the sword swallower. He also is the snake charmer. See Princess Karma perform her spectacular dance, suspended up high above the heads of the audience on the pallid surface no larger than a silver dime. She performs a dance accompanied by the weird music of a tom-tom orchestra, lit by myriad rays of thousands of tiny electric light bulbs. Every nerve, every muscle, every fiber of her body quivers like jelly in the bowl. Bring your friends, family, and children, or they will reproach you in later life for this uncalled for lack in their education. One dime, two nickels, a tenth part of a dollar, you may receive instructions. Don't push, don't shove, there's room for one and all. Hey, Buck, a man once stood outside of a big sideshow and loudly cried, right this way, we have the main attraction. With us today, the dancing princess, slim and tall. She doesn't move her feet at all. They say she drove the Sultan to distraction. Well, Hiram Green pull out a dime. He says, pause me and have a time. Give me your seat down front, far as I'm allowed. He stayed in there 4 hours about. At last they threw poor Hiram out. As they did so, he hollered to the crowd, oh, how she dances, oh, how she dances. I've never seen such movement in my life. It beats that dance they call Salome. Say, boys, you all would stay at home if you could only teach it to your wife. Oh, how she wiggles, oh, how she wiggles. She shimmies just like jelly in the bowl. See Billy Joe Winghead the Geek, captured in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, where at the tender age of 14, he had been helplessly incarcerated in the attic by his parents. He eats rats, mice, and chickens, and other living organisms. Yes, friends, he eats them alive.
Oh, How She Dances, James Luther Dickinson, from the album Dixie Fry, here with David Less and Ruby Booth.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you so much, David. Thank you for thinking of me and coming on for our listeners. I know they appreciate this, all this information about the history of Stanley Booth, how important he was in the history of Memphis music. What a character.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, he was on a tour. He was a stop on a tour. They brought in, some organization brought in a bunch of journalists who'd been imprisoned in their home countries for speaking the truth. And they said, we're going to, you know, we're taking them to great heroes and great sort of villains of America so that they can meet them. His response was, well, which am I?
Exactly. That was my next question, which am I? We would be remiss in not mentioning the importance of Furry Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
In Stanley's life, because Furry was pivotal in every Memphian's life of that generation and people like that. But you know, Stanley felt a real kinship to Torrey and really saved his life because, you know, if not for Stanley, there were no pensions, you know, for Furry
right.
and for the sanitation workers, as we all know how that turned out.
Yeah.
This next thing, and I guess we're kind of at the end.
Getting close. We've got about 5 minutes left.
All right. Well, there will be a memorial in the spring at a date to be determined. And we have said in the spring and a date to be determined so that people don't continually call me.
Okay.
And ask
Thank
me
you,
when
David,
that is
for
end.
Putting that together. So,
meantime, the funeral services are tomorrow.
Yep.
Right?
Funeral
yes.
services.
You want to give us the information again, Ruby?
Yeah, let me do that. The funeral services, it will be a traditional Catholic Mass because that's what he asked for. And it will be at Immaculate Conception Cathedral at 11 a.m.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll do some sort of a memorial depending on demand. I mean, if you are interested and you are a musician and you feel like you would like to participate, by all means, contact me and let me know. I have a Facebook page, I think.
Yeah.
But I am on Facebook.
David Less on Facebook. Okay.
I'm easy to find.
Okay.
Get me through the station. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't hide. You know, you can
right.
find me anyway. And let me know if you're interested in participating. Like I said, he was an honorary SOB. SOB, but many people liked him, and a lot of people liked his writings, and he did make a real contribution to Memphis and to Memphis music.
Yeah.
And are we at the, how many,
we've got to, about 3.5 minutes.
Is that how long
this
song is?
That reprise that you want to play is about a minute, and I've got a Rod Cooter and a Furry Lewis song here, too, if you want to fill in with some of that.
No.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay.
Why don't you
Dark End of the Street, reprise? Okay.
Yeah.
WYXR Memphis, 91.7 FM.
Let me tell them what they're listening to.
Sure.
This is a record that I produced by a bunch of young jazz players called Jazz Ensemble of Memphis. And the idea was to try to find the best young jazz players, or some young jazz players. And this is the Dan Penn, Chips Moman song, Dark End of the Street, which is the saddest song. It is a Memphis classic, and I always thought it's the saddest song in the world, but when I heard it, I thought it's really a dirge.
Yeah.
It really should be a dirge, and for that reason, I think we should play it for our friend Stanley Booth.
Yeah. Thank y'all for listening.
Whenever you're ready.
Thanks once more to David Less and Ruby Booth for stopping by WYXR Studios this morning on Riverside to talk about and show an appreciation and remembrance of Stanley Booth, Memphis author and writer. And I had no idea, David, how important he was in getting Finus hooked up with Atlantic Records. He was so more involved in Memphis music than I even realized.
Oh, yeah. He was a really important guy. He did a lot of things that people don't realize. A lot of things people do realize, but a lot of things people don't realize.
Let's mention his funeral is tomorrow again, one more time.
Yeah, it's tomorrow at Immaculate Conception Cathedral at 11 a.m.
Downtown Memphis, and a remembrance of some sort of appreciation in the future. David, you're planning in the spring.
Yes.
Memorial for him.
Well, I will plan. I have not planned.
Right. Planning. You're working on it. It's an idea. And a good one. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for taking the lead on as a friend of Stanley, showing the appreciation from his. He's important. We need to remember him. Memphians should know about him. And thank you for coming on Riverside and WYXR and bringing our listeners a little more about Stanley Booth, his history, and how important he was. Thank you so much, Ruby.
Yeah. Thank you for having us, and thank you, David,
for having us.
Thinking this.
Please come back. Talk some more whenever you have a chance. And again, Stanley's funeral is tomorrow, Immaculate Conception, 11 o'clock, and David Less is planning a some sort of a get together in the spring memorial concert. And those who are interested, get in touch with David.
Right.
Through your Facebook page. Thanks so much, Dave. It's 1 o'clock. WYXR Memphis. Time for Riverside. Go away, y'all.